Brainstorming Basketball Podcast. It has been a while. I mean, this offseason, I don't know how you guys feel. Harrison Liao, Yosef Nasser, that shit was exhausting, man. I'm exhausted. We finally got the Donovan Mitchell trade, but man, it was a grind this offseason.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I feel like it was like a whole 1 month like holding pattern where people were just waiting on the KD stuff. And honestly, I mean, we don't have to get too much into the KD stuff, but I'm kind of cool with how it turned out. I feel like it's way more interesting if he stays in Brooklyn.
As someone who loves transactions, I think it would have been cool to have seen him be traded to the Sixers. But, you know, short of that, you know, I guess it's fine. And this Donovan Mitchell thing, it's very fascinating. It's got really interesting ripple effects in the East. And look, I think we're 5 or 6 weeks away from the season. It's a little bit surreal. I'm, you know, in pretty hardcore Eagles mode. I think the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl. We don't have to talk about that. But, you know, it's going to sneak up on us. And this Donovan Mitchell trade was a nice reminder that the NBA is transaction crazy, man. And, you know, they can own a news cycle with, you know, just the snap of a finger with a big trade like that. And I'm excited to dive into the ramifications of it.
We should talk about that, though, really quickly, Yost, because it's an all Pennsylvania Super Bowl coming up. So it's an exciting time.
Hold on. Can we back all, like I said, the Eagles? What do you mean all Pennsylvania? Like Pittsburgh? You think Pittsburgh's going to win a title?
Could you imagine if Trubisky wins the division? I mean, he's going to lose his job in two games, but maybe even one.
I'm just envisioning. I just had a vision of like the promo where they play the dramatic like Super Bowl music, and it's Pickett. It hurts. Sunday night.
Well, yeah, football season is right around the corner. I know that's where a lot of the focus has been. Yo,
so can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm very sorry. So you're a Bears fan, Armand. Harry's a Seahawks fan. Those are two of the most atrocious teams in the league. Whose team is worse? Like, who do we feel worse about?
I couldn't name you like more than probably 10 to 12 Chicago Bears. I'm out. Man.
Fields is looking kind of zesty.
Yeah, he was. And I think that if Fields can survive this season and be somewhat productive, let's say 5 wins, I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's jacket on the
first
spot.
First ballot.
The supporting cast is like unlike anything we've really seen. So, you know, I know this is a brainstorming basketball podcast. I'm ready to brainstorm some basketball. But,
well, you know, if you guys are ready, I mean, we're talking about the Bears, so why not start it off with the news of today? Lonzo Ball is apparently not going to be ready for the season opener. Now, I just quickly, before I pass it to you guys, Lonzo, when this injury initially was announced, they said it was going to be several weeks. That was the original timeline. Then he got surgery, and they said 6 to 8 weeks until a return. And that was 8 months ago. So this reminds me, obviously, I mean, I think we all think of the Kendrick Nunn stuff from last season where the Lakers kind of were vague about the injury status and he never played the whole season. And now with Lonzo, 3 years left on his deal, we know how important he is to the Bulls, but it's just like, for me, mainly, it's just really bad optics by the Bulls and their front office and like the organization as a whole. Like, how do you mess up that badly with a diagnosis? But you know what? I am under the assumption that this is just how the Chicago Bulls operate, kind of like a semi-incompetent organization. Yost, what do you think?
I'm a little bit caught off guard because I thought we were going to talk about the Donovan Mitchell trade. And not have you take a victory lap on your Lonzo Ball take, because you were out from the very start and I was somewhat in, and I don't remember where Harry was, and
I was in,
you were in, and I mean, through a year and some change, I mean, Buckets, you're looking like you're absolutely on the money. It just wasn't a great move, and I think it's a tough contract to move if he's going to have these injury issues continue to resurface. I don't want to comment on the Bulls organization. I don't know, you know, what's going on necessarily there, but it's just, you know, it's a very strange situation. And I hope Lonzo can get back on the court, because when he was on the court, he was, you know, a difference maker, but it's just, you've got to be out there to make that difference. And the crazy thing is that this team could really use a guy like him with what he does, hitting open shots, making plays defensively, hit ahead passes to teammates. And, you know, he's a big question mark.
But that's what I was going to say really quick is you guys were definitely right as well. I mean, he impacts winning, and that's exactly what you guys were saying when we signed him. And I didn't think he impacted it that dramatically, but it's obvious how important he is to this Bulls team. Harry, what do you think?
Dude, what happened to teams just being like, this guy's out indefinitely? Is that not better than what, like, is that not better than being like just blue balling everybody and being like, oh, I mean, he's going to be back. I mean, when he got hurt, I think the Bulls were like a one or a two seed. Yeah. And I mean, now you might be looking at a play-in team, you know, and it's like just having, you know, I don't know if this is more relevant from like the fans' perspective or from the front office perspective or from the team perspective, but I can't imagine it's easy being in that locker room and being like, dang, like, is this guy going to be back? And this has nothing to do with Lonzo. I'm sure he wants to be out there, obviously. But, you know, I just don't understand. Like, if you're the team doctors and there's even a remote possibility of it being like a year long thing, right? Like, don't you owe everybody, especially Lonzo Ball, to be honest and upfront about like, hey man, like, you could be back in 2 to 3 weeks, but as crazy as it sounds, you might not be back for a year.
I think that they didn't know. I genuinely think that they are. Remember, this Bulls team is the same Bulls team, different medical staff, but the same medical staffs that kind of dealt with the Luol Deng tap. They've had a history as an organization, not this medical staff, again, not these guys, but as an organization. It's just how do you misdiagnose this badly? I don't understand how it's possible. And then when we think about the Eastern Conference, I sent you guys that tweet yesterday with a graphic of 8 teams in the Eastern Conference, and the Bulls weren't on that graphic. And it's realistic that they might not even be a top 8 seed in the East, as good as they look. Who do you guys think is the Bulls' starting point guard then to start the season?
I mean, it's obvious. We see him at Rico Hines.
Kobe, go soon, move.
No. It's going to be Io.
It is. I mean, I wish it was going to be Kobe, but I think it's going to be Io or Caruso.
Yeah, it's
right?
Io.
What do you think, Yos?
I think it's going to be – my instinct was Caruso, but, you know, Harry seems to have a strong conviction that it's going to be Io. I mean, what matters for us is that as 3 United Kobe White fans, it's not going to be Kobe. Hopefully, you know, he has a breakout season. You know, he's one of the guys in the 2019 class who didn't get a contract extension. We saw, obviously, RJ Barrett a few days ago got the 4-year, $120 million contract extension. Obviously, Zion and Ja have gotten their extensions. Darius Garland got a max extension. You know, Kobe kind of sitting there lingering, wishing the best for him. I think whoever grabs him is going to get a really useful guy who, you know, has a potential to be a steal. But, you know, at this stage, it seems like they're going to use him in that 6-man role.
This is a good time to transition to the RJ Barrett news, because that was kind of the domino that started the Donovan Mitchell news, which is basically the biggest NBA news that we've had in a while this offseason. I mean, it caught me completely off guard. I'm pretty sure it caught you guys completely off guard. I want to get right into it, though, with Cleveland, because people are talking about them as a serious threat to maybe make some noise even this season. Personally, I think we're going to get into this, but I have them. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I have them at 3rd, right behind Boston and Milwaukee. And I know that might be jumping the gun a little bit with this young group, but I really think that this is a loaded roster. And then when you factor in the development of Evan Mobley in year 2, I'm really excited for this team. What do you think, Yos?
I think my initial reaction to the trade was that that's a lot to give up for a guy. I wasn't as high as others have been on Donovan Mitchell. And I think that, you know, one of the things you can point to is Jalen Brunson's $110 million contract, because he got that off of his playoff performance against Mitchell and the Jazz. But in all seriousness, you look at the Cavaliers, what was their biggest need last year? Secondary playmaking. You know, they're net rating drop precipitously anytime Darius Garland was off the court. They made the move last year for Caris LeVert, and that didn't quite work out to what they had expected. And so I think the biggest key, though, to what you said, Buckets, is Evan Mobley. I think that this guy is almost kind of like prevents any type of like bad outcomes, because I think that what he flashed last year, it's just clear to me he's going to be a special player, and he's going to kind of be the key to how well this all works. And if this can go from a really good team to a championship level team, I do worry about defensively that backcourt, Garland and Mitchell, you know, smaller guys, 6'1", some change, how that's going to play. But you've got Jarrett in the paint, and you've got, you know, got different zone looks that they can throw out. And I think Evan Mobley is the linchpin to all of that. And you look around the East, there are some, you know, unusual backcourts, but it's just like when you talk about top of the East, right? I think you've got to take out Celtics and then, you know, the Bucks, right? And you know, they've got great size on the perimeter, and so I wonder how they would match up against those teams. But I think it was a net positive. My initial instinct was that Mitchell is a little bit overrated for the defensive concerns, but I do think that if Mobley takes a step up, like, the sky's the limit, because he's that type of a special player. And, you know, getting two shot makers like that, it's just going to enhance what this team can do.
What do you think the ceiling of this team is, Harry?
I mean, I couldn't agree more with like the Mobley point. I do think it rises and falls on Mobley. I don't see them being as good as maybe people think they're, not because of the talent, but because of the fit. I mean, I guess my initial reaction was like, I don't know, is Donovan Mitchell that much more productive than Colin Sexton is when he's healthy? I mean, they have such similar skill sets that I feel like I've already seen this, and it is Donovan Mitchell to me is maybe like a 15% upgrade over that guy. You know, I mean, we haven't seen Sexton healthy in a while. He played 11 games last year and he was horrible, but you know, maybe he was banged up. And the year before that, I mean, he's don't get me wrong, he's a chucker. He's a inveterate chucker, as Zach Lowe once deemed our beloved Kobe White, but he was 24 points a game. He's close to a 40% shooter on like a 40% 3-point shooter on like 4 attempts a night, which is not high volume in today's NBA. And Mitchell takes a ton more contested shots, a lot more difficult shots. But I mean, as skilled as he is, does that make him a better player? I don't know. I mean, I saw Mitchell, honestly, what I thought was like pretty compromised last year from a physical standpoint. I thought he didn't look like he had the same type of burst. He didn't look like he had the same type of, like, you know, like that quick twitch. And I also think Sexton is competitive as hell. Like, I don't really see the upgrade being significant enough to convince me that, like, the style, which we've already seen with, like, you know, the Sexton Garland stuff before, and, you know, caveat, Cleveland caveat, Sexton wasn't, or I mean, Garland wasn't what he would become without Sexton. But I just don't know. I mean, I just feel like the ceiling of this team, it really just depends on Mobley to me. I just don't really see a Garland Mitchell backcourt being, you know, all that special from a winning game standpoint. I think they're going to produce a lot of highlights.
I hear what you're saying about Sexton. I think he's going to be awesome in Utah, but I also think that there are certain guys that have an offensive gear and playoff basketball that it's just not attainable for all guys. And I think Donovan Mitchell is a guy like that. Like that Denver series, I can't erase it from my memory, because he does offensively, he does some things. Yes, he'll chuck from time to time. I really think that this Cavs team, they need like everything to go right, and they're not done yet. They need to find a guy to guard the Jason Tatums, the Jimmy Butlers, but maybe they can win the East this year. Like, is it that crazy?
Is it that crazy?
I think it all hinges on Evan Mobley. And, you know, I think we think the world of his potential. And that's one of the reasons where, even though I'm not super high on Donovan Mitchell specifically, when you look at the picks that they gave up, you know, unprotected picks, but if you've got Evan Mobley, you know, he's on his rookie contract. He's inevitably going to get his rookie extension. That's going to be 4 years with a player option or 5 years. So basically he's going to be on the team for 8 or 9 years. And I just don't see the picks getting to a play, barring injury, of course. Injury can happen to anyone, and that can, you know, put you, you know, all of a sudden, you know, in the lottery. But I don't think the picks are going to be too costly. And honestly, you might be able to make the case that even, you know, because the big debate was like, okay, the Knicks two unprotected picks with Quickly and RJ Barrett, was that offered? Was that not offered? I mean, I think RJ, you know, is more enticing than any of the pieces that Utah got back in this deal, because I don't think the picks are going to be all of that good. But, you know,
I don't know, man. You never know with it. Sorry to cut you off, but I feel like every time we've said that in the past, like, oh, that pick's not going to be anything. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like that's the statistics are like, oh, like that's rarely ever true.
But we're talking about a franchise level player who's only going to get better. And I guess, yes, the case, you know, and I made that caveat, injury. Yes, that injury is the caveat. But an Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, Darius Garland team, like, it's going to be a certain level of good to where it's like I mean, you can say, okay, play-in. But I think that this team is better than last year's team that lost in the play-in game. So the interesting thing about this trade is kind of the ramifications for okay, so Donovan Mitchell, I think he's a free agent in 2026, and it's similar to the Bradley Beal situation that we saw this past year, to where like an early extension isn't going to work because the cap is about to explode with the new CBA deal. So like they kind of have to have a feeling that he's going to re-sign. And then there's also an interesting ramification with Evan Mobley, to where because they have a 2 5-year max rookie contract extension guys in Garland. It was the same thing that when people were talking about why Bam couldn't be had to be traded for Ben Simmons. Like the Cavs are going to have some interesting maneuvering that they're going to have to do to make this work. And, you know, I question whether or not Mitchell is going to be there in 3 or 4 years. And if that's the case, are you going to be able to get the same thing that you gave up? But in the short term, like if you think that Mobley is going to be some modern day Anthony Davis or Tim Duncan or whatever, I mean, having these two attacking guards and figuring out the rest, I mean, that's got to be pretty enticing. I don't think that they're third Armand, but you know, who knows? Who knows? Maybe they get hot. Maybe they face a series of the, you know, right matchups in the playoffs. And look, the Hawks made the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago, and I don't think people had them there, so it'll be fun to watch. That's for sure.
Who would you guys take in a best of seven series between Cleveland and Miami?
Wow,
I'm going Cavs.
You think so?
I think that Miami obviously has a really great culture, and Cleveland doesn't really have anybody to guard Jimmy Butler right now, but I think Cleveland is really deep. Like Rubio, Love, LeVert, even they got Robin Lopez. Like that was a nice little signing. And then their starting lineup, I just think that they're like, they have 8 guys already for like a playoff rotation.
I'd go Miami. I just don't see the fit with the Cavs. Like, I mean, maybe LeVert gets moved again. I don't know. I mean, you know, I just don't know if there's enough ball to go around for all these guys. Like Rubio is most effective with the ball in his hands. Garland is like the next Steve Nash. I mean, fucking, you know, Mitchell is not an off-ball player at all, even though Garland and Mitchell are both extremely dangerous shooters. You know, LeVert is an absolute ball hog at this point in his career. I mean, what we saw from him in the playoff game was horrible. It was horrific. I was like, oh my God, like get this guy out of here. I don't know. I tend to side with, not the track record, but I just think Miami has a team that fits better. Like they're always, they seem to always be a team that equals more than the sum of their parts, like this iteration of them. And I mean, I think Bam's going to get better, a lot better too. As great as of a talent as Mobley is. I still think the world of Bam. I mean, you know, people are waiting for him to show up in that Celtics series and he was a little unimpressive for most of it. But the one game that he really went off, I was like, I mean, the ceiling is the roof with this guy too, you know?
So Yos, I want to ask you the same question, but I also want to add in, who is Miami's replacement for PJ Tucker in the starting lineup? Yeah,
that's actually what I was going to bring up, and I think it's going to be Caleb Martin.
Okay,
and that's I honestly think that in this situation, I see your point, I guess, is what I'm saying. I'm not going to say that it's clearly Cleveland, but I see why in that specific matchup, maybe you would favor a Cleveland and the horses that you have. But that depends on, you know, the guy we've talked about, Evan Mobley. But I can tell you this, like, that having two guys that you can headhunt, like, on defense, and you have to have them out there because they're, you know, two of your top guys, like, and like I was saying, you could say that about, you know, a few teams in the East. I mean, with the Nets and Seth Curry and Kyrie Irving, I mean, you can joke about the Sixers and James Harden and Tyrese Maxey. So they're not alone in the fact that they're, you know, dependent on small guards. I mean, lower in the Eastern Conference standings, you know, and DeJounte is a terrific defender, but, you know, they've got a smaller backcourt than Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. I think in that matchup, I see your case, and it goes back to Mobley. I just think that the Celtics are the team you have to get past, and then obviously the Milwaukee Bucks. And this doesn't put them ahead of those teams. And there are a few other teams, like, you know, my Sixers, that I would favor, but they've definitely leveled up, in my opinion.
I want to get our thoughts on a different topic in terms of, it's, you know, almost preseason time, training camp time. And I don't know if there's a consensus favorite right now in terms of the general public. I want to know who you guys think going into the season is the favorite. And also I want to know if this is the most competitive year going into the year that you can remember. Let's start with you, Harry.
Damn, put me on this. That's a great question, because I feel like we say this every year, like the parity is better every year, but I mean, it really is this year. And, you know, as always, it's contingent on health. I think that if I were to gun to my head, I'm going to go chalk. I'm going to go Milwaukee probably, because to me, this Celtics team, I felt like maxed out their level of play. Honestly, I know Tatum is going to get better. I know Brown is going to get better. I know Brogdon is a huge addition. They obviously lost Gallinari to an ACL injury that was also misdiagnosed, full circle. But I didn't figure Gallinari would play much in the playoffs just because of his defense. But when they did play Milwaukee, I mean, Tatum went off, and it was everything that it took to get past the team without their second best player, who is who took a step back in some respects during parts of last season, in Chris Middleton. I mean, but I mean, we've seen this guy do the fucking thing, excuse my language, on like the biggest stage. And Giannis is 28, 27. He's not old. And if there's anything that guy's going to do, he's going to grind in the gym. So, you know, I'd go Milwaukee. Yeah.
Did you say, just for clarification, did you say in the Eastern Conference or in the NBA?
NBA.
Clippers.
Yeah. And I'm with you, Yos. And why do you say Clippers?
Because, look, I know it's Rico Hines, but John Wall looks like something crazy, man. Like, having that element, and look, who knows how healthy he's going to stay, but Paul George looks terrific. They were already, like, built for this iteration of the NBA. They've got a great coach. They've got a lot of lineup versatility. They're going to get one of the best players back in Kawhi Leonard at some point, and I think that the infusion of energy that John Wall is going to be able to play, because they were a fairly slow team last year, and John Wall has the ability to, like, help them, like, have that dynamic. I loved him hitting those shots, you know, when people would go under the screen and Rico Hines, and, you know, they're saying, can't do that no more. I'm back. I'm him. Like, it's just, like, I love that. And it's, like, take a step back, Joseph. You're really picking the Clippers because of John Wall. It's, like, no, because Kawhi is coming back. And we saw what Kawhi and Paul George could do. You know, they made it to the Western Conference 2 years ago, and Kawhi was hurt, you know, the entire Western Conference final. So if we're assuming some reasonable level of health for him, and we're talking about adding John Wall to already what they have, I really like that team. I think they're deep. I think they can throw a lot of different lineups at you. And I think John Wall is going to be a really fun wrinkle. I think it's the Clippers in the West. And look, I've said this for 5 years and I've been wrong every time, but I really think the Sixers have something. It's satirical at this point, but I love what they did in the offseason. We have Joel Embiid fresh off of a season where he didn't win the MVP despite leading the league in scoring. And I think, like, I don't trust James Harden very much, like, in the playoffs, but something about that team keeps me coming back for more, man. I really like the Sixers. I don't favor them over Milwaukee, but they're right behind them in that Boston tier to me above Cleveland, but Clippers at the top.
Well, James Harden looks extra motivated this offseason, so that's a good thing. I want to, like, with the Clippers thing, it's really nitpicking. You nailed it, Yost. That's exactly how I feel about them. And again, this is like minor details, but like, could they be a team that's interested in Bogdanovich? I mean, there were rumors of Marcus Morris being shopped earlier this offseason. What about like Morris and a pick for Boyan? Do they need it? I don't even know. Like, putting another shooter around Kawhi. Boyan is an elite catch and shoot player. And I think that people.
He's healthy though.
Sure. But like, people are like just kind of attaching him to the Lakers already. And it's like, I feel like he's going to be really coveted. Like, a lot of teams could use him.
And we've heard, I think, some Suns noise around that too. I think the Clippers are set with who they have. You know, we didn't even mention Norman Powell. I think Reggie Jackson and his Clippers, you know, obviously there was a perception of him in Oklahoma City and in Detroit. But with the Clippers, he's been really a star in his role and a dynamic scorer. And particularly as a shooter, he's been outstanding. Terrence Mann gets better every year, you know. They've just got so many guys, and I think that Marcus Morris is a piece of that because he's a guy who allows them to access small ball lineups. I don't think they touch their lineup. I think that Suns and Lakers, I mean, there's, you know, a big thinking that the Lakers are going to be able to use the Russell Westbrook contract and picks, and, you know, people are linking Utah as the likely destination to where it's like, okay, you send us back Conley and Bogdanovich, for instance, we'll give you the contract and picks. And, you know, the Lakers are in a situation where they're fairly desperate to add more pieces around that. And if that were to happen, I think that you talk about Conley, Pat Bev. I mean, Conley is not what he was, but, you know, it's better than Taylor and Horton Tucker, for instance. So, I think Lakers are Suns for Bogdanovich, but I think those guys will be in demand. The guys who are on Utah, because they're, you know, they're following the Spurs lead and going absolutely nuclear and, you know, tanking trauma for Wembanyama, as Harry likes to call it.
Yep. I love that slogan, by the way. If you guys don't mind, I did some, the Utah guys, Jordan Clarkson and Bogdanovich. I did some mock trades, if you guys don't mind me going through these.
Guys, I've got to go. I'll
let it rip, dude.
Okay, well, the first one is Bogdanovich playing, we mentioned the power forward spot in Miami, sending him to Miami for Duncan Robinson. Now, Robinson has 4 years, $17 million left on the contract, and then you give him a pick maybe down the line, if you want to bet on Miami getting older. I think Bogdanovich is worth a pick, though, a first, right?
I guess it depends on the team. And Utah probably, you know, they're not going to say, okay, unprotected pick for Bogdanovich. You'll probably be able to put some lotto protections on it. So generally speaking, yeah, I think that's an interesting option.
Okay,
I can't think of a more hilarious fit than Duncan Robinson in Utah, by the way, like in Salt Lake City.
It would be hilarious. Next one, this is even better. Evan Fournier, and the Knicks have a ton of picks, so you give them one first, one of the plethora of picks for Bogdanovich. You get a little bit better, I guess, and you get off Fournier's contract.
I like it for the latter reason that you just said.
I kind of – Bogdanovich isn't changing my world if I'm the Knicks. The Knicks were stingy on giving up picks for Mitchell. I think that they want to go big fish hunting, and I don't think Bogdanovich moves the needle. I prefer the Miami trade to where they're a little bit more up against it in terms of the assets they have to unload. So I prefer the first one to the second one.
Okay. I have maybe two more Bogdanoviches. Here's the next one. Bertans, who has 3 years, $16 million, and a first for Bogdanovich. Send him to Dallas with Luka.
This makes a lot of sense to me. I like this one. I think it's probably my favorite of the three.
And you have two more Bogdanoviches? There's already two in the league.
I know.
I had to.
Last one. Send him to the Pelicans. My biggest issue with you have Zion, Brandon Ingram, Herb Jones, Valanciunas, a lot of non-shooters in that lineup. So you added.
Well, Valanciunas can jack it, bro.
First of all, Buckets, you were saying that Steven Adams was going to launch threes 2 years ago.
I'm still
remember, brother. So don't hate on Valanciunas now.
Sniper.
So you add Bogdanovich to that team. You give up Devontae Graham, Gary Temple, and second round picks.
Is it weird that I'm like drooling over a Bogdanovich Herb Jones like minutes, like 3-4? Like, that'd be insane.
I love it.
It seems like those guys, the reason why I wanted to bring them up is because there's been so much speculation about them ending up in LA. And it just feels like both of those guys, not even including Mike Conley, those guys are valuable pieces and they could like fetch Utah. They don't need to be strong to the Lakers, basically. Like, if they put Clarkson on the market, which he is, isn't that a really valuable asset for a team to go covet?
I get what you're saying, but if the Lakers are willing to give up unprotected picks and with the trajectory of this franchise, I don't know if the other teams are desperate enough to give up picks, and I don't know if you're betting on, you know, any of those picks of the teams that you mentioned, the Heat, Dallas, New Orleans, maybe the Knicks, but I don't know if you're betting on those as being as bad as the Lakers pick. So it's going to come down to protections. Jazz, at the end of the day, they're going to get the best asset they can for these guys, as they should. And so from that aspect, I understand where you're coming from, Armand, but if they can get Lakers unprotected picks, which is, you know, what we were talking about potentially with the proposed or the theorized Miles Turner Buddy Hield trade, you know, with the Pacers, I think they're going to go down that route.
Can I just really quickly say why I think everybody's going to the Lakers?
Why?
Because I think Jeannie Buss is the new Vivek Ranadive.
Oh my goodness.
I think everybody with a brain, and Danny Ainge is, you know, obviously he's ruthless with this stuff. I think everybody is just calling Jeannie about whatever they can throw at her, and just being, because they're in this state of mind right now where they're like, oh my God, we cannot waste LeBron, Anthony Davis. Like, this will be a total failure if we come out, if this ends like this and LeBron is, you know, playing, you know, with fucking Bryce and Bronny in, you know, maybe in Utah. Shit, I don't know. But like, I feel like, I just feel like the Lakers have such desperation written all over them that, like Joseph said, I think the package that they're willing to offer, nobody's going to be able to match it.
Was this your hot take? The one that you said that you were storing up for the pod?
Yeah, what's the
documentary? It was that Sexton is a better player than Mitchell. Well, not a better player, but it's that Donovan Mitchell's not a needle mover. That's okay.
Well, okay. I like both of those takes. I agree with you, though. I think that Jeannie has shown real, like, flashes of, again, I don't want to use the I word, but incompetence. I mean,
I thought you were going to say Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, my goodness. When you look at what this Lakers team has become, pre-LeBron, they were a circus. When LeBron gets there, they turn things around, and now it's back to like all these rumors. And what do they have to show for it? Pat Bev? This team is atrocious.
Isn't it incredible? Isn't it incredible that not even LeBron James could survive the circus? He has succumbed to the circus.
Yeah, it's nuts. I want to touch on the Lakers even more, but I do have one more Utah trade, and this is so, I'm sorry that I am doing this to you guys, but I really want to see Clarkson on the Bucks. I don't know why.
Ooh.
Grayson Allen, George Hill, and a 2029 first round pick for Jordan Clarkson.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
All right.
I think I do that if I'm Utah too, though. What do you think, Yos?
Can you read it one more time?
Grayson Allen, George Hill, 2029 first round pick for Clarkson.
Why not? I love her from Milwaukee, and I mean Utah. They're trying to get the best picks they can. I'm not, you know, keen on betting on Milwaukee picks, but I mean we see trades like that happen every year. And you know, if they're the suitor who comes hardest after Clarkson, then I think that, you know, they have a good chance of getting him.
One of the things that I think makes this season so unique compared to other seasons is that we're going into this season with, we already know Utah, San Antonio, they are actively trying to lose games from like day one. And then when you factor in Chet Holmgren's injury, which I know you want to touch on, Yos, Oklahoma City might be tanking very soon into the season. Houston might be tanking very soon into the season. So in the Western Conference, 11 teams might be fighting for 10 spots. So if you're the team that doesn't make it, you are pathetic. Because like there is 10 spots and there's 11 teams going for it. So if it's Sacramento, if it's the Lakers, if it's Portland, whoever is the odd man out from that group, shame on you. And with that, I want to pass the floor to you, Yos.
I just want to get clarification from you, Armand. When we first met you in 2019, summer of 2019, you were the biggest Lakers hater I've ever seen. I remember this was like so uncanny to me. Like we like so on like a weekend, for instance, the Lakers. You would watch the 10 o'clock Lakers games. They'd come on, I guess, at 9 because we were in the Central Time. You'd watch them all the way through, hate watching the Lakers, and then we'd go out in Chicago until like 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. It's just like you had to get that routine down of hate watching the Lakers, and then you can enjoy your week. So yeah. I just want to know, are you in Armand Lakers hater mode? Are you in Armand I love LeBron mode? Where are we at in terms of like how you feel about the Lakers?
I never know until like the games start how I feel about that specific team, because it's hard to like not appreciate what LeBron's doing. I know we talked about this about Serena Williams, but like when you have an all-time great at that stage of their career, I don't actively root against him, but could you imagine how hilarious it would be if they fell and they missed the play-in when you have four teams actively tanking? There's 11 teams fighting for 10 spots. If you finish in 11th, that is the most embarrassing Lakers season in history. And that's after what was already the most embarrassing.
After the most embarrassing. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what can you say about that? At that point, I honestly believe, and obviously this is hypothetical, the Lakers could finish in 8th, and this is irrelevant. But if that happens, I really think Genie would be pressured to sell. I really do believe that we would reach that point. I don't think we're far away from it. This has been a disaster.
Are we trying to start like a GoFundMe or Kickstarter?
I mean, the thing is, I really think that the direction of these franchises is heading towards like big tech, like big hedge fund guys and stuff like that, like groups buying it. And I don't think Genie's financial capabilities are going to allow her to be like running this as a top tier organization.
Wow. It's really interesting. Like, cause you think about it, the Lakers are so prideful of being, you know, kind of one of the last family owned businesses in the NBA, you know, and it's not that there's limitations on that, but there is a cultural disadvantage to that when you enter, you know, a corporate entity of the size of the NBA. And I mean, kudos to them. Like, it's a miracle that they have accomplished what they have, but at the same time, I mean, you got fucking data taking over, and I don't think Jeannie's out here crunching numbers. I think she's like, Pat Beverly is a dog, you know. It's kind of really like if, you know, if like a frat bro started an NBA team and just looked around the room and was like, who's like a dog, and I have LeBron and I have Anthony Davis, and you know. But that being said, I mean, okay, this is a big if, but if Davis can stay healthy, we really think they're going to miss the playoffs? Like, they were, they didn't have a great, you know, they didn't have a great start, but they, I think they were still like a six seed or whatever when he went down, right?
Let me just reemphasize this before you talk, Yost. Russell Westbrook, Pat Bev, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Thomas Bryant. That is, what is that, Yost? What, I mean,
I guess my stance on this is that Russell Westbrook is so, at this stage of his career, not a winning player. And I think you replace those shots and redistribute them. I'm assuming that they make some sort of trade to bring in some new players, and just, it's going to hinge on Anthony Davis's health. But, you know, I think they'll be able to get some sort of respectability, nothing close to approaching the top tier teams in the Western Conference. But like you said,
they're tied for seventh right now for title odds.
That's ridiculous.
But hey, look, Vegas doesn't mess around, so maybe they know something that we don't know. Kyrie guys, I don't know. Like,
what? How much better does this team get if they do like that Utah trade and they get Conley, Bogdanovich, and Clarkson?
Honestly, I think it's addition by subtraction. It depends on who's
exactly
going out.
That's my whole case, is that Russell Westbrook, he's not a winning basketball player. He's one of the least efficient. He had one of the least efficient seasons in history last year. Turnovers, bad shots. It's just, you know, it didn't work at all. And, you know, I think that's, you know, you talk about dysfunction. It's just, you know, you're paying $40 million to a guy who's not delivering that value. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the salaries are the way of getting talent in your team. You have a limited amount of salary that you can get. There are certain rules to how to put these salaries in your team. And when you're paying $44 million for Russell Westbrook, it's just not going to work. So if you can redistribute that and get like players who, yeah, they don't have the name appeal of Russell Westbrook, they're not a top 75 player, but they can play a role on a team that's built around LeBron and Anthony Davis. I mean, it hinges on Anthony Davis's health, but I think that trading Russell Westbrook and getting pieces back, if it's the Utah deal, I think it could be worth 3, 4, 5 wins.
I know.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Harry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how long before Austin Reeves is feeling really awkward about like stealing reps from Russell with like the ones in practice?
Dude, I mean, if this is the team, Westbrook can't stay in the starting lineup for more than like, they have to pull the plug on it immediately. Like as soon as it doesn't work, which is like now, okay, you give it like 3 regular season games and then yeah, it's the awkwardness. He's going to have to deal with it. And if he doesn't like it, the John Wall treatment from last year, like that's the deal. And I think Russ either will understand that the easy way or the hard way. I want to ask you guys though, if that, I know we didn't prep for this, but if that hypothetical Utah trade goes down, you add Conley, Bogdanovich, and Clarkson, let's say, I just want to gauge where you guys have them at. Like, let's say Lakers versus Suns, who would you guys pick in a series?
I prefer the Suns.
Yeah, I take Phoenix.
That was quick.
But actually, you know what's interesting, though, is that, again, it comes back to Davis, because if you remember that first round series, the 2-7 matchup where Davis got hurt, I mean, that was like, it might be closer than we think. Who knows? Because are we assuming Chris Paul is going to be the same Chris Paul he's been the past 2 years? So, you know what? I know I said it quickly, but I think I'm going to default to it depends on Davis. And I know that's a cop-out, Armand, but that's kind of how I feel about it. Because, you know, I guess you could make the counter like, hey, Yosef, like Mike Conley, Jordan Clarkson, that's not Alex Caruso, that's not Kyle Kuzma, that's not Dennis Schroeder. It's just, you know, not as good. But I would favor Phoenix, but it's closer than I think you would expect based on how poorly the Lakers played this past season.
Yeah, I think it would be very interesting. What do you think, Harry?
I don't want to all jump on the bandwagon together. But, I mean, Conley does change the equation, though, just from a basketball standpoint. Like, it's like kind of like the Mario Chalmers type, like at this stage of his career that LeBron needs. No disrespect to Mike Conley. He's had a much better career, and he's a much better player than Chalmers. But just, you know, having you know, quote-unquote, a true point guard, I hate that term, but, you know, somebody that actually understands, like, the flow of the game, spacing, plus shooter, And Bogdanović, you know, obviously knockdown shooter. I mean, that's the thing. Like if you remove the names on the back of the jersey, right? Westbrook, Beverly, whatever. The biggest problem the Lakers have that they just can't seem to understand is that you need shooters. You need to be able to shoot the ball in today's NBA. And they have one plus shooter in LeBron James in the starting five, right? I mean, Davis is not even close to the shooter that a lot of people projected him to be when he was, you know, starting to show it in their run when they won the Mickey Mouse finals. But like, other than that, like, I mean, they really, you know, I joked about Austin Reeves earlier, but they're going to need to rely on him.
Oh yeah.
As ridiculous as that is, like they're going to need him to play like a Duncan Robinson type role.
I can't wait. I want to put you guys on the spot. So we mentioned, let's assume San Antonio, Utah, Houston, OKC. Let's just eliminate them. Might be unfair to Houston and OKC, but let's just do it for the sake of this. Who do you guys think is the fifth team to miss the playoffs? So out of the rest of the 11, who is going to miss the play-in and the playoffs?
Can I read you Portland's like roster right now?
Sure. I don't think it's going to be Portland though. I mean, but go ahead.
I think it might be Portland. I mean, it's Lillard. They just drafted this kid. He's hurt. Shaedon Sharpe, Nurkic. Fucking. I guess they got Jeremy Green. I kind of like that. You know,
Josh
Simons.
Hart.
He had a Josh Hart. I mean, okay. I mean, I can kind of see it. But is that team like if we're gonna do the same exercise of like you know. LA versus the Suns. Like, I don't think they're better than this, like, idealistic version of LA. Maybe they're better than the current roster, but I don't know.
I'm grading them against the current roster.
Okay. I mean, yeah, obviously that's fair, but I got to see it. I don't think very highly of Portland. To me, they're a bunch of hodgepodge pieces, like, thrown together.
There has been so much speculation that Russ might be on the opening day roster, and I don't think it's getting enough coverage because that is ridiculous. Go ahead, Yost.
So I was going to default to Sacramento because they haven't made the playoffs since we were in middle school. that Kevin Martin, Ron Artest team of 2005-2006. So I was going to default to them. I know you probably have a soft spot for them. And I mean, Keegan Murray, obviously the Summer League MVP. So that gives you some hope. But then Harry read Portland's roster, and I think I'm going to go with them.
Wow. Okay. So we got two Portlands. I mean, again, if it's the current roster, I really think it's going to be the Lakers. I do. I think it's going to be LA. Sacramento is, yes, they're Sacramento, but I trust De'Aaron Fox, Sabonis, whatever they have going on over there, more than I trust not only the Lakers roster, but Davis to stay healthy, James at age 38. Dude, I think that this season might just turn into all being about LeBron breaking Kareem's record. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Is LeBron really at this point? I don't think we've ever seen anybody like in this weird twilight zone where he's still putting up ridiculous numbers, super efficient, probably more skilled than he's ever been, just in terms of pure basketball skill.
His shooting last year, and crazy. You touched on this, outrageous from the mid-range assassin. Like he didn't get the credit that he deserves for being. You know, when you think about, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge back in the day or whatever, like he like Dirk Nowitzki back in the day, like absolute assassin from mid range from three, as you mentioned, Harry, like absolutely you're spot on from the skill level standpoint.
But yeah. And isn't it strange that like it almost feels like he cannot impact winning with a roster that's this clunky, but we never would have said that about, I mean, obviously we never would have said that about LeBron when he was like 25. But it's just wild to me. Like, you're talking about someone who might be, you know, depending on who you ask, the second or third best player of all time, maybe even the first best player of all time. But, like, that yet this guy who's still obviously not in his prime, but like we just talked about, like, peak skill level, that this team, that he's going to be have a team that's worse than Portland? I don't know. Like, it's bizarre to even consider.
I'm still very much in the camp that – the Russell Westbrook fit was such a bad fit with LeBron because, you know, we talk about Mike Conley and Jordan Clarkson. Those are guys who can play off of the ball. LeBron needs the ball. I just feel like I'm going to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. And I know he missed the playoffs his first year with the Lakers as well with that Lonzo Brandon Ingram team, but he was also hurt that year. And who knows, maybe he's not going to stay healthy. Maybe Anthony Davis isn't going to stay healthy, but I just think that Russell Westbrook was historically bad. as a shooter, as you know, from a turnover perspective, that, you know, when you're doing that to too many possessions, you know, how are you going to have a chance? And I didn't even mention his defense is atrocious. So I really want to, you know, see, you know, if he's at a stage where, yeah, he can put up the numbers, but he's not going to impact winning. Or if he has, you know, an Anthony Davis, a healthy Anthony Davis, and a Patrick Beverly holding him accountable on defense, if he can summon some of what we saw in 2019-2020, the year, you know, pre-pandemic, then obviously when they won the bubble championship down in Disney. I'm still very much wait and see, because, you know, year one of LeBron the Lakers, he got hurt with the young guys. Year two, outstanding in the regular season, COVID happens, they're able to win the bubble championship. Year three, him and Davis missed time in the lineup, you know, but they're still in the playoffs against Phoenix. But, you know, obviously Davis gets hurt and they fall in that series. And then obviously this year it's the Russell Westbrook year. So I'm very curious to see what happens.
But then, Yost, why is Jeannie Buss saying stuff like she said this week about, first she misspoke saying that Westbrook was the best player. What she meant is he was the most durable. She said he was the most consistent because he played 78 games. It's like they don't understand that we all have league pass, that we all saw it. Like, you can't fluff up his trade value at all. So,
but that's exactly what it is, Armand. It's just fluffing up his trade value, in my opinion.
Okay, well, damn. Like, what if it isn't? What if it's trying to get his confidence up because he's a part of this team and he's their point guard?
That's how I felt about it. I thought she was trying to do a little Phil Jackson, you know, try to coach the team through the media.
Dude, if they run it back with Westbrook, Yost, you just nailed it. Like, this was an absolute disaster. If you go into day one with him, I don't know. I know you guys are probably sick of talking about the Lakers, though, but, like,
no, not at all.
I find it so fascinating. Like, a team that's, you know, 2 years removed from winning an NBA title, and it literally is close to being the laughing stock, if it's not already the laughing stock of the league. I don't want to say that yet, though, because we don't, maybe they make a trade in the next day or two, you know? Who knows?
I feel that way about the Nets, too, by the way, which is funny because KD's had this, you know, this mirror career for, like, you know, staring across the court from LeBron his entire career. And now it's almost like they're battling to be the craziest NBA circus, you know?
They're foils on either conference. It's funny you say that, but it is, you know, they get attention for strange reasons on both sides.
So. Let's talk about the Nets real quick. What do you guys think, after everything that's happened, what do you think is the best case scenario for the Nets this year? Is it still a championship, or where are we at with that? Yost?
I wouldn't say a championship. I would say, you know, if you're asking me, like, literal best case, like, second round and out. I think that they're a team that, obviously, a lot was made about the Kyrie flicking off the fans and whatnot. I think that, you know, that was a matchup issue in my opinion, where Boston has massive guys on the wing and the Nets have a bunch of small guards. So how are you going to be able to, you know, contest, you know, those monsters and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum when you've got Seth and Kyrie and Goran Dragic? It was more like a matchup personnel issue than, you know, the drama, but obviously that kind of stuff sells as well. But, like, I think that against the good teams, like, you know, for instance, you know, Philly, Miami, maybe Cleveland, like we were talking about, I think they're a maybe like 5 to 9 seed in the Eastern Conference, barring some sort of move. But I don't see serious contention for them.
Yeah, Harry?
I couldn't disagree more. If you're talking about best case scenario, it's absolutely a championship.
Wow.
But best case scenario is, like, I mean, you know, not a lot of teams get the privilege to say this, but the Nets best case scenario, it's a 0.001% chance, which is that everybody plays and doesn't do weird shit. You know what I mean? But if that happens, you know, and again, take it with a grain of salt, they're a paper tiger, right? Amazing on paper. But if that happens, this team is ridiculous. I mean, at least up at the top. And when you're in the playoffs, I mean, we have a lot of evidence to show that that's kind of all that really matters, right? You know, and you have pieces that kind of fit around each other. Say what you want about the Seth Curry, Goran Dragic thing, but like, I thought Goran played well for them in the playoffs, and Seth is as much of a plus on offense as he is a liability on defense. It's matchup dependent. Boston is a nightmare matchup for him. But, you know, I'll also say that, you know, I watched that series very closely for a variety of reasons. One, my geographical location. I live in an undisclosed location in Boston. Two, I had money on that, on all those, on the Celtics the entire season. And so I was, you know, I had vested interest in them. I watched that series very closely. That was one of the most competitive sweeps I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The Nets were in a really strong position to win the first three games, I would say, you know, and they fell apart probably because they're such a shit show. But if they can get their shit together, I mean, I don't see a scenario in which coming into the playoffs, if Brooklyn is, as you say, like in this best case scenario dream season, that they wouldn't be favored against, you know, a Cleveland, maybe a Miami. I think they'd probably be favored. Philly, to me, it would depend on the season that they have. I'm pretty optimistic on them too. But I mean, yeah, fuck yeah, absolutely. I think they can win. You know, with the Kyrie thing too, the last two games of his season, right? Last three games of his season, games 2 through 4 against Boston, he was horrendous. He was awful. But if you look at the games that he did play, I mean, he had a 60-point game against Charlotte. I didn't see a lot of Kyrie losing his touch, really. And I didn't really see that from Durant either. I thought Boston just played unbelievable defense. I feel like the refs swallowed their whistles a lot, to be honest with you, against KD. They were so physical with him. But I mean, on paper, you can make a case that they're the best team in the East.
I don't know how you can say that about – I don't know how you can have any level of confidence in Ben Simmons based on what we see of even being the player that he was. I just think when you go through something that traumatic and everybody knows it, that's going to be every team's game plan is to play off of this guy and hack a shack him and humiliate him because he's proven – mentally, he's not going to be able to handle it until he proves otherwise. So that's and by the way, Ben Simmons, I'm looking at the roster right now. Ben Simmons, Royce O'Neal, TJ Warren. That's about it in terms of guys who can defend you know, bigger guys on the wings, your Jimmy Butlers, your Jason Tatums, etc. That's
that's the end of the list of guys in Brooklyn that aren't over 45, like when you get past like the, you know. So I hear your point. I mean, I have zero confidence in Ben Simmons playing. I'm just talking about pure like best case scenario, which would assume that he does play, right? I think their worst case scenario is a hell of a lot more likely than their best case scenario. But I would put their best case scenario, you know, up there with anybody.
Even though with their best case scenario, I still have question marks regarding. For example, they're starting five, like especially with the center position, like that center position is really thin. Are you going to start Claxton? Because if you do, how are him and Simmons going to share the court as two complete non-shooters? Like, where is Simmons going to play? Like, are they both going to be standing in the dunkers on opposite sides of the dunker spot? Is one of them going to be screening and rolling every time? The other guy's going to be standing in the dunker spot? It doesn't seem like, I don't know, like,
what and are you by the way, do? You talk about the center position, like, you're talking about Nick Claxton, you're talking about LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake Griffin, De'Ron Sharp, and then I think what you said, Buckets, is that it's going to be a lot of Ben Simmons at the center, and against the Giannises of the world, against the Joel the Process Embiid, who's going to be motivated to kick their teeth in if they were to meet in a playoff series. I just don't have a lot of optimism. But look, if Ben Simmons is the X factor, if he revisits the guy who was the rookie of the year and the three-time All-Star and the potential defensive player of the year, all bets are off, I guess. But I don't know how you can project that based on what we've seen. I just think he's going to come back, and I think it's going to be shocking the extent to, wow, this is Ben Simmons now, huh? Like, it's going to be one of the strangest NBA stories that we've seen. That's what I feel is the most likely outcome.
And Yos, I think Blake Griffin and Aldridge are still free agents, actually. So, and
shocker.
I'm pretty I'm pretty sure that their starting or their center rotation right now is literally Claxton and De'Ron Sharpe. I could be wrong about that. I could be forgetting somebody in there, but it's not.
You're right about Blake and LaMarcus. They signed Yuta Watanabe.
Wow.
He's not a center, he's a forward. But it's like, yeah, it's going to be Claxton and De'Ron Sharpe if they don't add another guy.
To your question about the center, I think they're going to miss Bruce Brown a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's huge.
It was a big loss for them. I just, in theory, I get what you're saying, Harry. I do. Like, best case scenario, they have a lot of talent. I just don't know how the pieces fit, as weird as it sounds. Like, when you have a guy that refuses to shoot, what position can he play in the modern NBA besides center?
What do you mean? I mean, we saw the Warriors just win a championship. We've seen the Warriors win many championships with that guy. This is Draymond. I don't want to compare Ben Simmons' career to Draymond's career at all. That is completely ridiculous and it's unfair. And to be, you know, to be clear, I think Brooklyn's probably going to suck. You know what I mean? But I think, like, the dream scenario for Brooklyn is awesome. And it's that Ben Simmons plays that Draymond, that Bruce Brown type of release valve where, you know, yeah, if you're up in a series against someone like a team like Boston where KD's getting, you know, iced out and then trapped, you know, on the sideline, and he needs that release valve to play downhill, create like a random 4-on-3 situation, you know, throw a lob, you know, I don't know, make something happen in a scramble. Again, I couldn't agree with you guys more on the point of, like, we have no idea. The likelihood is close to 0% that Ben Simmons is going to be that guy again. But he, you know, for a long time, he was that guy in Philly. You know what I mean? So I can't believe I'm defending Ben Simmons on a recorded channel right now. This is wild.
We should also mention the back injury, which has been an injury that has really, you know, impacted the careers of many athletes before. And I think that Michael Porter Jr. has something similar going on as well. So, like, that's a huge thing as well. And I know that you hinted at it, but, like, I mean, mentally is one thing, then physically it's a whole nother thing. It's just a lot. But honestly, cannot wait to see it.
Can't wait.
Cannot wait.
Top tier drama. Speaking of Michael Porter Jr., we had a Rico Hines sighting of him. If there's anybody that could use a Rico Hines sighting, it's Ben Simmons. Just get out there, man. Just fucking play some pickup, dude.
I'm completely out on Rico Hines runs. I know, the John Wall stuff, I completely agree. It was awesome. The I'm back motherfucker and all that stuff. It was great. But I just, dude, I can't, like, Malachi Flynn was dropping like 70 in Toronto's pro-ams. Like, what is going on, man? Like, and then, by the way, like, a lot of talk about those kind of stuff, but, like, Talen Horton Tucker goes 5-for-13 in the Drew League and has like 14 points. I think that deserves the same kind of attention as the other stuff. Like, I'm sorry. The pro-ams are more like, I don't learn anything good, but I can learn some bad stuff. Like, when Denzel Valentine got lit up by Frank Nitti, dude, huge red flag. I mean, the red flags were already there, but, like, that was when you knew it was like, it's almost time to hang it up.
This might be a good time to talk about Chet, speaking of pro-ams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know, Yost, you wanted to touch on the Chet subject. Obviously, devastating injury news with Chet. Yost, what are your thoughts about what happened?
I mean, it's just devastating for him, obviously. Disappointing as a fan, you know, of someone who wanted to see what this Oklahoma City team looked like with him, and, you know, that's prolonged another year. I think it's very frustrating, you know, when any, you know, like Ben Simmons missed his rookie year and Blake Griffin missed his rookie year, and it's just, you know, stinks for those guys, and it's not fun for us as basketball fans either, and hopefully he's able to recover. I mean, there's, you know, a history of big men with foot injuries who have been able to, you know, Joel the process and beat nearly the MVP last year. So I'm not going to say that I'm concerned about his long-term future yet or anything like that, or it's any indication on who he'll be as a pro, because in the summer league, he showed flashes of brilliance. It's just more than anything, you know, disappointed for him and disappointed that we don't get to watch him play.
Completely agree. And I want to get your thoughts on this, Harry, but before I do, a report came out today, and I'm trying to find it as I speak, about the Knicks basically shifting their focus to whoever the next disgruntled star would be. And a name that was mentioned, here's the report by Mark Berman of the New York Post. This is just speculation, but a name that was floated around was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And obviously the timeline with OKC now gets pushed back a year, but Shai's 24, and I want to get your thoughts on Chet, but I just think it would be asinine of Oklahoma City to even consider trading Shai. He fits to me the timeline completely, but Harry, what do you think?
You lost me at Berman. He's no, I mean, look, Berman is a well tenured reporter, you know, and around the New York basketball scene. I mean, if that's true, smart, you know. I mean, I think that's exactly what every single franchise that has any kind of juice like the Knicks still do, shockingly. I think that's exactly what they should do, which is like, hey, we have other stuff in place. We have assets. Like, let's just wait and follow this trend. You know, like you said, it really does, like with the tech industry thing, like it really does mirror a lot of these other sort of industries where people just tend to follow trends. And the NBA is kind of, you know, in line with that nowadays, where it's like, okay, everybody seems to be unhappy with being wherever they are and being a max player wherever they are. And the grass seems to always be greener on the other side. So why not just like wait for one of these guys to jump ship, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I just, even if Shai was disgruntled, if I was Oklahoma City, he is the main key of this future. And I wouldn't even consider dealing him. I mean, I understand Chet, I understand Giddy, but to me, Shai is the main guy. What do you
think? Yeah, but I mean,
or, go ahead, Harry.
Sorry, just to finish that thought. Like, I also think that if we know anything about Sam Presti, it's like he just wants to keep piling up assets. And so, like, the Knicks have a lot of assets right now to kind of dish out, especially after the Mitchell trade didn't happen. So, you know, as weird as it sounds, I could see. I mean, Oklahoma City is the most flexible. They have the most flexible plan right now in the NBA. And so if they don't see Shai as being in that top tier of superstars, they have the juice to save up to try and make a run at one of those guys. Who knows if it'll actually happen, because it's Oklahoma City. But we're also in a landscape of today's NBA where, like, I don't think a superstar would hate playing in Oklahoma City, especially when you have, you know, an exciting kind of surrounding cast around you with the likes of someone like a Giddy and a Chet, who I think any ball dominant star would look at that team and be like, I could probably fit in there, you know?
I agree. What do you think, Yos?
I think that I agree with your sentiment, Arman, about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I think that he is a really good fit for what they're building and should be a part of that future. I think if we see a trade, it'll be for one of two reasons. And the first reason would be Shai basically is going to be in the first year of his rookie extension. This year, he's going to be in this fifth year of his career. If he gives an indication like, hey, guys, I'm not resigning when my contract's up, I want to play in a big market. This is a guy who started his career with the Clippers for that first year. And, you know, he's into fashion and he's always been a player who's thrived in the spotlight. I think of this shot. It may have been against the Lakers. I'll pull it up on YouTube. Where he hit the step back three and then he's like, I'm him. Like, I feel like he like would thrive in New York, for instance. So I think if he planted a seed in Presti's ear, it's like, hey, you know what? I'm not really feeling this, man. Like, get me out of here. It'd be something like that. And if Oklahoma City decided or figured like, look, I don't know. Like, are we too good? Like, could we crack, you know, with Shai, you know, an all-star caliber player, like, are we too good? I mean, we thought they were going to be horrendous and they were very competitive. They had to shut him down, like, to lower their record to get in a position to where they were able to get Chet in the lottery. So I think it'd be one of those two things. And I think that this Wembanyama madness, and for good reason, he's one of the best prospects we've seen. And I think that Presti could get a little bit itchy where it's like, Chet and Wembanyama, like, I'm set for the next 15 years. Like, these are guys I can build here, and we've got them under team control for 8 or 9 years. And this really cool twin towers with Giddey, who's just absolutely brilliant. And then we've got these big wings and Jalen Williams and Usman Jang, and Lugansdort just re-signed to a contract. So I think it would be, look, theoretically, what you're saying is absolutely right. Practically what you're saying, where it's like, Shea is that scorer. He's the guy who, when you need a bucket at the end, and it's not just his scoring, it's everything he brings to the table. Like, he seems like such a perfect fit who meets their timeline. I think it's either Shea who's going to ask for it, or OKC say, hey, this team is too good. Let's grab these picks, and, you know, we're going to have an arsenal regardless. Let's make a run at Chet, or not Chet. Let's make a run at Victor Wembanyama. Let's grab Scoot Henderson. Let's get one of the Thompson twins. This kid, Nick Smith, Whitmore. I mean, this draft is so loaded where it's like, I think that I could see them. I could see them trading him.
I could see it too, Yost. I just personally, I hope it doesn't happen, because I would like to see that team at least, you know, fully healthy at some point.
Shea brings something that's not really on that roster, and when it comes to its full fruition, like, I think he's an important piece of that. I think it's if he and his team say, hey, we're out of here, and or if Presti says, hey, look, I mean, let's grab these picks. I mean, there's a lot of picks here that we can grab. You know, let's do that.
Can I ask you guys a question before we jump off the topic?
Yes.
First of all, is there a limit to how many picks you can trade in one deal?
I think you can only do 5, because it's like there's a maximum number of years out that you can
go out. Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Because I was going to, my next question was going to be like, what if Oklahoma City just trades like everything plus Shea for like, you know, like for who, I don't even know if that would ever make sense.
For Giannis.
But I mean, Durant. For Giannis or something. Yeah. Or Durant. But I mean, also, like, you know, with the Wembanyama thing, you know, you have Victor, you have Scoot, who I know we're all pretty high on, but really high on, but you know, you only get a 25% chance. Like all the worst four teams in the league. What if Oklahoma City is just like, hey, like, we know, I don't think Victor would ever get moved. Maybe not Scoot either, but what if they for some reason didn't end up in that top four, and they're like, you know what, it's time to cash in. Here's like 5 firsts and Shea.
I think those teams would pass on it. I think the hype, well, at least for Victor, I don't know about Scoot. I think the hype is so outrageous where it's just any team is going to be salivating. This is the reason you tank and go through this type of situation to get a Victor Wembanyama. So I think that any team with that in that situation would say, hey, thanks, but no thanks. We'll take Vic.
As of for me, guys, I don't have any other questions to touch on. Do you guys have anything before we get out of here?
How many starts did Mitch Trubisky make for the Bear or for the Steelers? Over under 5.5 before we see Kenny Pickett.
Heart says over, head says he gets like maybe a game and a half.
Oh, over under 5.5 minutes.
Oh my god.
What if it's just first drive, pick 6, get the rookie in here?
I wouldn't be like totally shocked if he gets pulled in the first game. If it's going south. But I hope not. I mean, we're rooting for the Steelers over Cincinnati. That would be a huge divisional win too for our Steelers right before, you know, things get serious with Mitch and the boys. Could you imagine, by the way, really quick, if Trubisky wins Week 1, his leash should get a little bit longer in theory, but who knows?
Mitch starts or Bears wins?
That's a great question. I'm going to go Mitch starts. Because
I'm going to go Bears wins. That's a good bet.
I'll go Mitch starts. I think they give him 6. I think the Bears get 4.
I think Eberflus, I think it's an addition by subtraction.
Well, I guess we will wait and see. Thank you guys, as always, for joining. This was fun. I cannot wait for NBA season. Go Ben Simmons. And until next time, we are out.